Hello everyone and welcome to the final TSFP of the 2020-2021 season. Sid, you look like a man who's just at the end of his tether. We're recording a little bit later than usual as well because it's been so busy. You've had so much to do at the end of the season. But yeah, we're here crawling over the line.
We really are. I am anyway, I don't know about you.
I'm like Atletico Madrid.
Yeah, I'm very definitely on my knees.
Who were crowned champions at the weekend, as I'm sure all of you already know, after their relatively dramatic 2-1 win at Valladolid. Real Madrid won their game, but it wasn't enough because Atleti did what they had to do. This is what happened on match day 38, the final round of fixtures. Friday night saw Levante and Cadiz play out a 2-2 draw. Betis came from 2-0 down to beat Celta 3-2. Eibar lost 1-0 at home to Barca. Antoine Griezmann scoring the goal for Barca, who in the first half had an expected goal of zero.
Wow.
The XG was zero for Barca in the first half. Eibar were
out. I bet that probably wasn't them doing the stats, though. They probably just looked at the team sheet, said Messi's not there, just put a zero.
Yes.
Just write zero down.
Yeah. Messi wasn't there, nor was Pedri. They were given permission to start their holidays early. Huesca nil, Valencia nil, a result that had huge ramifications at the bottom of the table. Had Huesca been able to find one goal, they would have stayed up, but they didn't. Osasuna nil, La Real 1. Madrid 2, Villarreal 1. Goals in the 87th and 92nd minutes from Real Madrid as they came from 1-0 behind to beat Villarreal and extend their unbeaten run to 18 games in La Liga. But it wasn't enough because Atleti also came from behind to beat Valladolid 2-1. Elche beat Athletic Club 2-0 to secure their place in the top flight. Sunday saw Granada and Getafe play out a 0-0 draw, and Sevilla beat Alaves 1-0, final game of the season. Sevilla, 77 points, their highest points total ever in La Liga. So this is how it ended. The champions, Atletico Madrid, Champions League places, well, obviously Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid, Barcelona and Sevilla. The Europa League, Real Sociedad and Real Betis. And the Conference League, Villarreal, if they don't win the Europa League. If they win the Europa League, then they go into the Champions League. Relegated were Huesca, Valladolid and Eibar. I actually got some stats here. You know, we quite like stats. This is from Fran Martinez, I think, on Twitter.
La Liga en Juego, is it called?
La Liga en Datos or
en
something.
Datos, en Datos.
Something like
right,
that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so these are all attributed to him, but there we go. So we had 380 games, 158 home wins, 114 draws, 108 away wins, and 953 goals scored. Top scorer, Lionel Messi, 30 goals. Top assist provider, Barry Aspas, with 13 goals. Most goals with the right foot, Luis Suarez. Most goals with the left foot,
Leo Messi, I guess.
Obviously, with 27. Most headed goals, Ante Budimir.
Yeah, he's had a very good season, actually. Very good season, yeah.
Very strong end to the season. The player who scored the highest percentage of goals of their team, Kike Garcia, 41% of Eibar's goals. The player who's participated in the highest percentage of goals of his team scoring or assisting, Gerard Moreno, 50% of Villarreal's goals have either been scored or assisted by Gerard Moreno. The player who's given the most points to his team thanks to his goals,
Luis Suarez with 21.
Correct.
That's one of the few stats I did know, yeah.
The team with the most goals, the top scoring team, Barcelona, 85. Yep. The lowest scoring team, Getafe, with 28.
It's not a huge surprise that they're the lowest, but I didn't realise it was as low as 28. Wow.
The most headed goal scored by a team, Madrid, 16.
Yep. Makes sense.
The fewest headed goal scored, Villarreal, with just 3. So there we go. And the most goals scored in the area, Barca and Madrid, 11. The team with the fewest goals scored outside the area, Cadiz, didn't score one goal from outside the penalty box all season. There we go. I can't claim to have figured out those stats myself. As we said, Fran Martinez on Twitter, thank you very much. Sydney, you were in Valladolid to witness what happened on the final day, to witness Atletico lift the league title for the second time under Diego Simeone. A remarkable, remarkable achievement. The first question we always tend to ask you, what was it like to be there?
It was slightly different to the previous games because it was tense and it was on edge, but it didn't feel like it was driven, the sense of experience wasn't driven by the tension in quite the same way. I think partly because while we did have a scenario in which Atletico Madrid had to come from behind, and while when Vidalic scored, you just thought, I don't believe this, it's actually happening, some of the tension was taken out, which with hindsight was foolish, was taken out by the fact that the result coming in from the other game was in their favour. So a lot had to go against them for them to not win the league. And also by the fact that they turned it around quite quickly. So the second half started and there's a run from Marcos Llorente, which I think reactivates everyone. It kind of shakes the game up.
Yes.
And you get a brilliant goal from Correa. You get a goal from Suarez. I think there's still 20 minutes to go when he scores, maybe even 21, 22 minutes to go. Real Madrid are still losing 1-0. That said, with hindsight, we should probably have been a bit more tense than we really were, because, of course, Madrid score in the 88th minute. They then score again in the 92nd minute. And Sergi Guardiola misses a sitter. Well, maybe a sitter's a bit harsh,
but misses
a really good chance in the 90th minute. And actually, if that goes in, they score. Now, obviously, look, all of this, I'm telling this from my perspective. And my perspective is also coloured compared to the two previous games where it had been really tense against Osasuna and against Real Sociedad.
Yes.
But the fact that this time I was writing a live match report. Now, that increases the tension
for you,
for me, but it also increases the focus only on that game. And I must admit, I didn't know Real Madrid had got the second goal.
Right. Well, you messaged us about 5 minutes to go. You messaged me and you said, well, this is really tense. And I said, well, no, it's not.
Yeah, exactly.
Madrid are losing.
So it was tense, but it wasn't the focus of tension that had been before. And that's the thing. I suppose at that point, I felt it was tense just because they might still lose it. But I thought their reaction was very good. And I actually think when we take a slight step back, we look at these last three or four games, and I actually think they've handled this reasonably well. For all the tension that we've seen, for all the fact that they conceded first against Osasuna, conceded first now in this game, conceded late against Real Sociedad and suddenly were on edge, I think emotionally they've dealt with this pretty well.
Their first half of the season statistics were absolutely unbelievable.
Fantastic.
Wasn't it? 16 wins from the first 19 games. Then they had a little drop. But then I think, as you said, these last few matches, the run-in, they've been pretty strong. Even though they've been shaky in terms of having to ride their luck a little bit, in terms of the performances, they've been quite strong.
Yeah, I think there are lots of ways to pick up on and analyse Atletico Madrid's season. Obviously, the first one to do is look at it as a season as a whole, and they won the league. 2 points over Real Madrid. I think it's 7 over Barcelona. I might be wrong. And it's 9 over Sevilla. And as you've already said, that's the best Sevilla in history. So if you take it as a total, these are pretty good totals. They're only 1 point off the total that the league champions got last year and the league champions got the year before. So take it as a whole, this is still a pretty good season. Admittedly, last few years, I've seen those numbers drop. Because, you know, we're a long way from those seasons where teams were getting 100 points. We're a long way from that. So, and I think that's partly because the league is more competitive, although it's also, of course, true that there's been weaknesses in Madrid and Barcelona that perhaps we didn't see 4 or 5 years ago. Then, as you say, if we split it up, you could say the second half of the season, they've been just trying to hold on to that lead they had in the first half of the season and nearly lost it. But there's two answers to that. One is to say, yes, but you can only hold on to what you've had the ability to get in the first place. The second is to say that at some point, some nervousness was inevitable. Also, as we said right the way back at Christmas, before it even happened, we were saying on this podcast repeatedly, there probably isn't a collapse coming, but there is definitely a slowdown in the rate of picking up points coming, because this rate cannot be maintained. And you look at their second half of the season and take it in isolation, it's 19 games, 3 defeats. That's not that bad. You know, if you extrapolate that over a season, even I can do this maths, it's 6 defeats. Now, that's probably not enough to win a league, but it's not that far off. So if we're not assuming that the two halves of the season are exactly equal, that's not a bad half of a season. It's not quite good enough, but it's not a bad half of the season. The other thing is that they did eventually resist. And they resisted a Real Madrid team who, as you have just said, went 18 games without losing, and they were able to hold them off. So that's not a collapse. And they also then had a bit of a recovery. So they were held by Betis. And that was the point at which, and Simeone talked about this, he was really, really interesting after the game, and there's loads of things we can pick up on, so maybe we'll come to them in a minute. After the game, one of the things he said was that after the Betis game, when they drew, he started talking to them about the value of resisting. That you have these points and we hold on to these. They then played really well the next two games. They put 5 past Eibar, one of the few games I didn't see this year. I think, oh, they're going to get 5 now. Then they lost to Athletic, and that was the point at which he thought it was over. But a couple of things happened after that. One was Koke sending a private message to a friend, which then got leaked, basically saying, we're Atletico Madrid, we suffered them, but we're going to win this league. And I must admit, I didn't think they were, but it did happen. The other thing was, Simeone talked about this, and I thought this was an absolutely great story. He admitted that after the game, that he went to the physios and the staff at the club, and in particular the staff on reception and the gates at the training ground, and said, right, from now on, no one says buenos dias. You say, vamos a salir campeón. So in other words, good morning is now said, we'll be champions. Now, I know it's stupid and it doesn't really mean anything, but that kind of constant, right, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. Every day we're going to put this message into you, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And it creates, even if it's a bit silly, a kind of a collective thing. And then you get a team that wins four of its last five games. The only one it doesn't win is Barcelona, away, in which for an hour they're the better team. Admittedly, they were close to blowing it at the end. And they were close to blowing all the other games. But they did hold on. And if we laud teams for doing that, and we quite often do, not least because it's exciting and it's epic and all the rest of it, I think we probably have to extend that same courtesy to Atletico.
Absolutely. I mean, just rewind back to the game against Osasuna and the penultimate match day, and you were texting me, you were there again, you were saying it's gone.
I was absolutely convinced it was gone. Now, I don't know if that's partly just the kind of the experience of having seen this before, if it's partly that I'm guilty, and I absolutely will be, of buying into some of those kind of narratives and storylines that are built around clubs. I wonder, you know, obviously, admittedly, if these two or three borderline moments had gone the other way, I'd now probably be acting smart and saying, see, I told you so.
Yes.
And that is true. Look, we're all opportunistic I probably would.
Yeah.
In that sense. And of course, I think what happens is at the end of the season, you have to take a step back and say, all right, let's judge this on its whole. Now, in those final five games, it absolutely is true, by the way, that Real Madrid had a chance to go top against Sevilla and didn't take it. And that Barcelona had a chance to go top, not in the final five games, just before them, in the game against Granada. And they didn't take it. And so you can look at those two games and say, well, Atletico were let off. Yes, you can. But they were let off once in an entire season. In an entire season, there was one moment for each of the competitors, one, in which Atletico could have top spot taken off them. And they didn't. And I don't think that's a case of saying they completely blew it, although in the Granada case, perhaps a bit more so. Because, you know, Madrid against Sevilla is very borderline. It's a difficult game and all the rest of it. And so I don't think it would be fair to look at this season and say Atletico won the league because it was gifted to them, or to look at this season and say this is a league no one wanted to win. I think we've heard that a bit.
Yeah.
I don't think it's true that no one wanted to win. I think it's been a season that's been really, really difficult, where it's been very hard to get consistency. And actually, in that context, I think Atletico's response has been really, really good.
Second La Liga win for Diego Simeone as manager of Atletico Madrid. What similarities are there between this one and the one in 2014?
I think there are very few. I mean, there are some. Some of the approach is similar. The mindset, I think, is similar. I think you can look at it and say, as I think we've pointed out on the podcast before, that back then there was an Atletico player who'd said in the autumn during a conversation I had with him, we can't win a 100-point league, and it wasn't, so they could win it. And that's the case again this time around. That it was a season of a sense of weakness for Real Madrid and Barcelona, which I think has been replicated. But I think the way they play is slightly different. I think the shift in players, and I think this is one of the areas in which you have to look at Simeone and give him an enormous amount of credit. This isn't that team hanging on. There are two players left from that team. Jimenez, who I think was 18 then, and Koke. They're the only ones left. I saw a stat the other day, and I hope I've got this the right way around. There are two left from that Atletico Madrid squad. From that season in the Barca squad, I think it was 8, and then the Madrid squad, 10. So Simeone genuinely has built built another team. And I think that's to his enormous credit. I also want to pick up on something that you said there when you introduced that. This is Simeone's second title. It's 2 in 7 years. As we pointed out on the Twitter feed, 7 years between titles. How many coaches last that long? How many coaches are allowed to last that long? And how many coaches come back and do it? It's a huge achievement. But here's the big thing. 2 in 7 years.
Yes.
It's as many as Real Madrid.
Yes.
It's as many as Real Madrid. We're talking about a team that, you know, we still see them as a third force, and they are. Let's not forget their best two players are probably Llorente and Suarez, one who was not wanted by Madrid and one who was not wanted by Barcelona. But they have matched Real Madrid domestically in these 7 years. It's not just that. And Simeone made this point after the game, and I quite like the way he expressed it. He said, look, we're getting closer, and I keep saying to him, we're getting closer to these guys. We can compete more, apart from Barcelona, because they're different, because Messi's still around, which I thought was quite a nice way of putting it. But he's also got a team now, Atletico, who in 3 of the last 4 years have finished above Real Madrid. this isn't a one-off. This isn't a, crikey, that was a fluke season. Now, of course, there are fortunate elements that go into it, as there are, I think, in any league title, except those, you know, where one team wins it by 10 points and you know, just two or three of the Barcelona ones have been like that. They've just walked to the title. But it was, and it was tense all the way through, but how could it not be?
One of the similarities between 2014 and this title win was that the title-winning goal was scored by Uruguayans, Diego Godin, in 2014.
That's true. I hadn't focused.
And this year, Luis Suarez.
And it went to the final day. And by the way, 10 times Atletico Madrid have had to win the league on the final day, and they succeeded each time.
Back to Luis Suarez and his outpouring of emotion.
Yeah,
at the full time
whistle, wasn't it?
Yeah, not just the tears as well, but also his. His interview as well after the game was very interesting.
The footage we've seen, of course, him FaceTiming his family and crying, but then in the interview he broke right at the very start, the very first question. And I think what we saw there in part was one of the reasons why he's been so successful this year, because I think he has been driven by a feeling of rejection. And he talked about menospreciar, which I really find a difficult word to translate. I suppose he's saying they belittled me. They belittled me, or they didn't respect me, or they had a lack of faith in me, or whatever you want to call it, how Barcelona treated me. He said it had been very, very difficult. I must admit, there have been moments during this and one or two of the interviews Suarez done this year where I've wondered if it has been a bit overplayed, this, if he's become a bit more sensitive to this than perhaps is necessary. But of course, we don't see all the inside.
What do you mean? Feeling.
Well, I mean, all they did was sell him. There's a bit of me that thinks, as someone like Suarez, of the age that he is, knowing what the industry's like, I'm surprised how upset he is about it. I know, you know, it's upsetting to be kicked out. It's upsetting to be told we don't want you. It's upsetting to be kind of broken from what you see, not just as the club you're going to be at, but the club where you're going to retire,
right.
The city where
you're going.
So
all of that is quite
upsetting. All of that is very, very important. Right. But Suarez is nothing if not a competitor and a realist when it comes to football. And so I'm quite surprised how much it hurt him, because I thought it's the kind of thing that, unless
maybe it was done in a certain way which we're not necessarily privy to.
I suspect that the nature of the conversation with Koeman, yes, and the nature of the conversations, yes, with Bartomeu were probably not entirely pleasant.
Yeah.
And certainly we know.
And that's why he felt menospreciado.
Well, and the other thing that happened, and I think we mentioned this in the summer, I'd not actually seen it in the media, but I think we mentioned it this summer. Barcelona tried to renege on the agreement to let him go.
Hmm.
And I think that really annoyed him, and not just that, but I think he genuinely thought that was unbelievable. It's like, right, you want me to go, and now when I come to you with an offer, you go, oh, hang on, it's Atletico Madrid. No.
Yes.
When they have signed a contract which names certain clubs he's not allowed to go to,
yes,
explicitly, very explicitly names those clubs, and doesn't name Atletico Madrid.
Yes.
But then when you turn up and say it's Atletico, they go, well, actually, maybe not. And so, you know, and I think that has fueled him, and I think that's part of it, and that's one of the reasons why I do wonder if next year Atletico Madrid at the very least need to think about having another striker as well, maybe not to replace Suarez, but as well as Suarez. But this year, I think ultimately he's the player of the season, or he's the story of the season anyway. He's the season is defined by him. I mean, the best player in terms of performance, I think, is Messi, but I think the player of the season is Suarez.
The other parallel between 2014 and this year, of course, 2014, David Villa left, yes, Barcelona, came to Atletico Madrid.
Yep.
They won the league.
I mean, to pick up on the Suarez thing I was saying, we didn't get this sort of emotional response from Villa in quite the same way,
no,
did we?
No, absolutely not. Listen, there is much, much more that we could talk about Atletico Madrid, and we will, over on Patreon. Ask us questions. We've got a Q&A pod coming out tomorrow. However, we do have to move on, because there are other things that we want to talk about, not least Real Madrid. How much of a summer rebuild are we expecting from Real Madrid, and how much is that conditioned by what happens with Zinedine Zidane?
Well, you said the word conditioned, and I think that's the key. Because what you want to do and what you can do, as we've said this about many different scenarios in life and in football,
yes,
what you want to do and what you can do are not always the same thing.
Yes.
I think that the reason that certain things didn't change sooner was because Zidane was still there. So I think in a way him going does kind of open up some of those changes. I think it's very significant that Sergio Ramos is going as well, because I think that changes the balance of the dressing room.
Sorry, watched? Sergio Ramos is going?
Well, I'm making that assumption.
Okay, right.
Sorry, I didn't make. Yeah, that I said that as if it was just has already been announced. It,
yes,
absolutely hasn't. But
okay.
I think it almost certainly will be. I just can't see a scenario in which your captain hasn't renewed at the end of the season, no one has said anything, and he ends up staying. How can that possibly be?
Well, you know,
it's going to take some serious revisionism to try and pretend there wasn't a problem if he now stays.
Okay.
If you see what I mean. That's, which doesn't mean they can't, because plenty of clubs have done
that
before.
Yeah.
But I actually think Real Madrid, from a club point of view, want him out. I think they want to save on his salary. I think they would have loved to have had a transfer fee from him a year ago, for example, but didn't get one. I think with Ramos and Zidane gone, if they do indeed both go, and of course neither of those things are absolutely confirmed yet, I think there will be a very clear sense of we can change structures within the dressing room, the balance of power. And of course, it remains to be seen whether that's a good thing. Because you look at the squad, you think, okay, so who leads now? Casemiro maybe. With time, perhaps someone like Fede Valverde, although I'm not sure personality-wise if he's got... I think in terms of his play, yes, but in terms of his personality, perhaps not.
Nacho
up to a point. I'd actually really quite like to see how Nacho would respond to being put in a position where he's not the guy that everyone appreciates because he does a job. When we start asking more of him, because I think he's a brilliant player. But I wonder what the position will be at that point in which we want more than that from him.
Hmm. Okay. But your feeling is that Zidane goes then?
I just don't... I think if you read between the lines, admittedly it is reading between the lines, I think, as I said on the podcast a week or so ago, from people who are not direct enough for me to be really, really confident, it's been, you know, communicated to me that there's been a decision made for a while now. And, you know, as I say, I'd very much like that to be harder and faster. Because if it was, of course, I would have written this as a piece of news rather than a speculative thing at this stage. I think so. Okay. I think so.
Obviously, I've been living in Madrid here for the last 9 years, covering Real Madrid on a daily basis. Like to think that I've got my finger on the pulse, kind of what Real Madrid fans, at least in Madrid, feel. And it feels like this season, it's never, ever a success for Real Madrid if they don't win anything. But it feels that this season, it's different in the way that it's happened. There have been other seasons where they haven't won anything, and it's felt a lot more serious.
I completely agree.
Serious.
And I find it very strange.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I've been really...
Well, there has been this narrative of, you know, it's been such a difficult season for everybody. They've been fighting against injustices, perceived injustices against the referees, with injuries, with COVID.
But you see, the thing is, with the refereeing thing, I mean, quite apart from whether or not it's true, and let me say from the offset, it's complete nonsense. It's not to say there haven't been decisions go against them, but the idea that there's somehow, you know, this is the key reason why all of this is happening. And for example, the Militao handball, I think we've made a huge amount out of what, in my opinion, was just not a massively, massively controversial handball, a massively controversial moment. But I don't think it was the kind of...
No, that's not the controversy. The controversy is other handballs similar that haven't been given. But yes.
But what I mean is, I think so much was made of it. But the point I was going to make wasn't really that. The point was more that in previous seasons, when focus has been on the referees, it has, I think, expressed a disgust or a competitiveness or a desire to win the league. That this time, it's been more resignation than anger, hasn't it? It's and I think you're right. I found it very strange. I don't really know what it is. I don't know if it's a sense that, look, this is just the reality, and at some point we need to deal with it. And maybe not winning anything means we can now.
I think they just felt that with this squad, this is all that we could have done. We couldn't have done much more with this squad.
I don't think that's entirely true. I mean, for what it's worth, look, I don't think...
Well, in Europe, I think it's true. I think they overachieved in Europe.
I think that's right.
And then, listen, you can't win the league every single year.
No.
But what you can do is you can compete for it. And that's what they've done.
That's exactly the thing I was going to come to. I don't think you can ever say a league season is a failure if you've taken it to the final day.
Which is kind of the message that Zidane was getting across.
But I was surprised. But my surprise isn't so much that message, because I think that's justified. And I think it's even true. I think it's natural that a manager says that. But I also think it might even be true. What surprised me in a way was that everyone said, okay then. Because that doesn't normally happen here.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's maybe because it's Zidane and he is... He is Zidane. I was trying to think of there isn't any other... He is Zidane. He's done everything that he's done. Everybody loves him. Even those who... And this is, by the way, is true all the way through his time at Real Madrid as manager, even though that's those that doubt his managerial qualities. Mm. And bear in mind, this is a man that won 3 European Cups in a row.
Yes.
And a lot of people were still saying, is this guy a good manager?
Yes.
And he'd done something no one else had ever done.
Yes. all right, there may or may not be serious changes at Real Madrid this summer.
I think there has to be. The question is, how do you pay for it?
Same question at Barcelona as well.
Right.
Were there going to be big changes, managerial changes? And if there are, how on earth do you pay for them?
Now, this is different to the Real Madrid situation.
Okay.
And it's different to the Real Madrid situation because, as I've already said, they finished 7 points behind. They weren't competing to the final day. They weren't even competing on the penultimate day.
They won the Copa del Rey.
They did win the Copa del Rey, which in theory makes it a better season than Real Madrid's. But
yep.
They were knocked out of Europe earlier. And, of course, they were, and this is where it is similar to Real Madrid, the parallels there. I've said lots of times on this podcast, I'm surprised how everyone accepted the idea that this was a transitional season.
Yes, you have said that.
How easily they accepted. Not necessarily that it was wrong to say that, but how easily it was accepted. And, of course, that transition will presumably be accelerated this summer, not least because Joan Laporta, the new president, said, we need to change things. You know, it's inconceivable the way we lost it. Was it inconceivable, the word he used?
Unacceptable.
Unacceptable, I think. What's was it? Yeah. I think, anyway, whatever yeah. It was, he said they can't win the lose the league in this way. And I think that will accelerate now. And he said that there's an end of a cycle. But all of that said, I listened to Ronald Koeman say on Sunday, this squad can't do more. This squad isn't good enough to do more. Which, I mean, let's strip away the questions of whether that's a manager protecting himself, whether a manager should ever say that anyway. And I think I understand Koeman because I think he feels menos preciado. He feels that he hasn't been backed. He feels he hasn't been supported. And he feels he's taken on responsibility for the entire club that wasn't his responsibility. And I think he's right. I think that's true. Which isn't to say I think he's done a brilliant job. I think he's done a good job in certain elements and not so much in others. But I want to pick up on that particular thing. This squad is essentially saying this squad is not good enough to win the league, right? He then said in the same press conference, Atletico Madrid have a really good balanced squad. I don't agree. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Atletico Madrid's squad. I think it is balanced. I think it's a very good squad. I think it's a strong squad. But I'm not having it that Barcelona are a weaker squad than Atletico Madrid. And I think this has been part of the problem. What we've accepted, that this squad can't win the league. Yes, they can. And in fact, they got themselves in a position to have been able to win it and then didn't with the Granada game and so on. And as I've already said, let's contextualise this in the whole season. But I'm sorry, I don't buy that. I think when Barcelona have played well this season, they are the best team in Spain. I think that was probably for 2 or 3 months this season, they were the best team in Spain. I think the quality of the squad, sorry, a squad that's got Dembélé, Griezmann, Messi,
Pedri,
Frenkie de Jong. I really like Ronald Araujo, but maybe you wouldn't include him in this list, but Ter Stegen.
Poor Ansu Fati was flying at the start of the season.
Poor old Ansu Fati, admittedly, he was injured for most of the season. Even with their ages, would you say Busquets and Piqué, although I think actually it's become a bit taboo to point out how bad they can be at times, including Piqué, who I've defended a lot over the years.
Yeah.
It's time, I think.
Yeah.
Even Jordi Alba, when he's good, because when he's good, he's still the best left-back in Spain.
Yeah.
It's just that he's an attacking left-back who gets exposed sometimes. But that's... Let me go back to the point I made before. Atletico won the league with Suarez, who you're saying you've got to get rid of. Now, I'm not questioning whether Barca have to get rid of him. And we've talked about this before, and I don't want to go over old ground. It's not necessarily the decision to get rid of him that was a bad thing, but they won the league. So this idea that our squad can't do it and Atletico's can, I'm sorry, I don't buy it.
No,
I don't buy it at all.
I don't think many people buy it, to be honest. The future of Koeman is still completely up in the air.
Also, he is talking like a man who doesn't expect to go. And wants to kind of take a few people down with him, isn't he?
That doesn't expect to go.
Sorry, doesn't expect to stay, rather. Yeah. Wants to take a few people down with him.
Yes, that's the general vibe coming out of Koeman.
I'm not saying he's wrong, by the way. On a lot of what he says, he's right, but yeah.
Did you see the post from Pjanic on Instagram?
I don't know. He said something like he needs to think about this and he has some questions.
He said this season leaves a bitter taste and questions that still need answers.
Yeah, it does. And I don't want this to sound like an attack on Pjanic because it's really not his fault entirely. But yes, it does. And the key question is, why did they buy you? Now, we know the answer to that. It wasn't footballing reasons. And I wrote a piece when he went there. And it doesn't matter that I wrote a piece, but just to make this point, in which I wrote, even if Pjanic turns out to be the greatest player in the world, even if he turns out to have a fantastic season and Arthur goes there and plays rubbish, completely rubbish all year, this is still a disgraceful signing. And if you add on to that, that there's been no footballing contribution whatsoever, whether that's Koeman's fault, the club's fault or Pjanic's fault, and I'm sorry, Miroslav, you don't get
That's not his name.
That's not his name. What is his name?
Miralem.
Miralem, not Miroslav. Sorry, yes. I mean, there you go. That's how irrelevant he is. I can't even remember his name.
Yeah, that's actually quite telling.
That's, by the way, that's my fault, not his.
It is.
But he played
a bit more, you would know his name at least.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily entirely his fault, but that deal is so appalling.
Yes.
And it now has a footballing appallingness to it as well.
Mm. So, we'll wait to see what happens with Barcelona and Real Madrid. Let's talk briefly about the bottom of the table. What happened on the final day of the season was that Elche managed to claw themselves to safety. An incredible job done by Fran Escribá since coming in. They looked like they were going down. They looked like they were...
2 weeks ago, their players were basically talking like they'd gone.
Yeah, I mean...
They'd given up. Bear in mind, they survived with 36 points, which is very, very low.
Very, very low. As we said, Huesca, they needed one goal against Valencia to stay up. They couldn't get it. They go down along with Valladolid, who sacked manager Sergio González and their sporting director. In truth, I think a lot of Valladolid fans think that decision should have been taken a lot earlier on in the season, to be fair. But sad.
I'm never sure, though, about the value of doing it on the day the season ends. I suppose to be seen to be doing something.
Well, yes. But
what it really expresses, of course, is we're always going to do this.
Yes.
But, well, in which case, do it anyway.
Yes. But there we go. Well done to Elche. Tremendous effort from them. And they managed to stay up. Huesca go back down along with Valladolid and Eibar. The European spots, we had a fantastic end to the season from Betis.
Brilliant.
Really, really, really impressive.
Two defeats in the whole of 2021. Pellegrini was saying himself after the game that around about Christmas time we were conceding too many goals, but we straightened that out, we fixed one or two things, we talked about it, the competitiveness of the team since then has been brilliant. And they've been kind of low profile brilliant all year. And this is where I hold up my hands and say I've not written about them, partly because it's never really felt like anything was happening until at the very end when it had, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
They've I think low key played very, very good football for most of the season. Not always got the results that football should bring with it. But the back end of the season, they've been very good indeed. And you know, we've seen a real recovery for Borja Iglesias, who'd had a pretty difficult time of it. And he said this himself.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's had a really big recovery. We've seen a very, very good season from Sergio Canales as well, who I think is a really nice footballer. And it's really quite exciting seeing them back in Europe. Well, see both teams from Seville in Europe is pretty fun, isn't it?
Certainly is. Euro Betis back in the Europa League. Real Sociedad have had a fantastic season as well.
I think they're brilliant, and I think Imanol's brilliant, and I think he was right this weekend when he said this feels like we were champions.
Yeah.
Because those four are actually not reachable. So we're the first, if you like, of the other teams.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure that Sevilla are not entirely reachable, but I think what Real Sociedad have done this year, and the way they've done it, the way they play, the fact that they won the cup, albeit it's last year's cup, but they won the cup, I think they're a really nice team.
We will, over at patreon.com/TSFP, we'll try and rustle up some end of season awards on Thursday, I think, on the bonus podcast, which is something we usually try and sort of half-heartedly do at the end of every season, but we'll try and spend a bit more time on it this week. So, just to let you know that, as ever, the Monday pod, comes to a close with the end of the season, but we keep the content going throughout the summer at patreon.com/TSFP. So why don't you come and join us, because it's going to be a huge, huge summer in terms of movements in La Liga. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Real Madrid and Barcelona. We've also got the European Championships as well, which is going to be very interesting. We've got the Spain squad to discuss in just a second. We've also got the playoffs coming up as well. Who's going to be joining Espanyol and Mallorca in the Primera División from the Segunda? There are 9 games in the Segunda tonight, with 5 teams, Leganés, Almeria, Girona, Sporting and Rayo, battling for 4 playoff spots. Vamos Rayo, if they win their 2 games, they're in. So let's see. Talking of playoffs, congratulations to Real Sociedad B, managed by Xavi Alonso, Ibiza, Burgos and Amorebieta, who have been promoted to the Segunda División, all back in professional football. Amorebieta has a population of 19,000.
Yeah. I mean, you could pretty much get the whole town in their podmobile.
Yeah.
A bit of a squeeze.
Away day to Ibiza, I think, next season.
The Wenger bus is coming.
So, yes, congratulations to all of those teams, and we look forward to covering them in the Segunda División next season. The Spain squad, as if we didn't have enough to talk about on today's...
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? It's really difficult to keep up with all of this.
On today's podcast, but the Spain squad for Euro 2020... Euro 2021 was announced today by Luis Enrique with some high-profile absentees. So the squad is as follows. Unai Simón, David De Gea, Robert Sanchez, the goalkeepers. Gaya, Jordi Alba, Pau Torres, Laporte, Eric Garcia, Diego Llorente, César Azpilicueta, Marcos Llorente are the defenders. Busquets, Rodri, Pedri, Thiago, Koke, Fabian are the midfielders. Dani Olmo, Oyarzabal, Morata, Gerard Moreno, Ferran Torres, Adama Traore and Pablo Sarabia are the forwards. So missing from this are, you might have heard, you might have recognised, Sergio Ramos isn't going to be there. Of course, he's barely played since January. He is the captain, though. He's not there. Neither is Nacho Fernandez, who many, many people, myself included, were absolutely convinced should be going. Jesus Navas, Sergio Canales, Mikel Merino, and Barry Aspas. We're trying to get the hashtag trending justice for Barry, because he really, really should be there as well. You've been busy with other stuff, so you haven't really had time to digest this.
I've been digesting it sort of before we started. I was looking at the list just before you arrived, and I looked at the list, and right, how do I say this politely?
Remember, if you swear, we don't go out on Indian iTunes.
No, I wasn't going to swear, but I was looking at the list, and I did think, that's not a team that wins the European Championships.
Yeah.
That's the honest answer. Now, in defence of Luis Enrique, I don't know if it's necessarily missing players where you would go, oh, well, now it does win the European Championships. I think so. I think that might be, you know, let's start with the fundamental kind of raw material question. I don't think you look at that and go, well, if only he'd taken so-and-so, they'd win this. But I think there are some very interesting absentees. Let's start with the one that everybody's talking about, which is Ramos. That's the one I think is almost least of a debate, because as Ramos himself has said since, he's just not fit. And while it's a pity, and while, of course, he has a status that means he could have been important, while I'm surprised that Luis Enrique hasn't used the 26 slots that he could have used, and could have put him in and just in the hope that he gets him fit. But I think actually it's probably a good thing to not have all the focus on Ramos all the time, if he's not going to be able to play. But it's a bit of a surprise. I don't think that's a big one. I'm with you. I think not having Nacho in there is very, very surprising indeed.
I just can't get my head around it. I just don't understand what the logic is for not taking him. I mean, there's nothing in my mind that will make you...
Not least because he's versatile. And so if you take him, you can fill in...
Yeah, but he is versatile, and we get all this as well. Yes, he can fill in. He can fill in. But he's one of the best centre-backs in Spain.
Exactly. He should go as a centre-back, but this is the point. What I mean by this is there are two options for him to go. One is you go because you think he's a great centre-back.
Yes.
The other is you go because you've got a limited squad.
Yes.
Even though you haven't used all 26 places. You go, why not have a player who, if I have a problem, can get me out of a hole in two or three positions? Now, admittedly, you might argue that's partly been fulfilled by the surprising inclusion of César Azpilicueta. Now, I say surprising... I have wanted him in for ages, and
we were talking about this the other week, weren't you? You are his cheerleader.
I am his cheerleader
in Spain.
I was the only one. He's in now, and I'm pleased. But I'm also baffled, because if you think Azpilicueta is good, you don't just think that now.
Yes.
Nothing has changed in the last 3 months, and I think that's one of the concerning things. We've talked about this before. Is that sense that this is really kind of unstable?
Yeah.
Really erratic. That it doesn't have a clear, if you like, thread running through it. Now, admittedly, I'm going to defend Luis Enrique a bit. I don't think he's a stupid man. I don't think he's a man that takes decisions lightly. I don't think, and I do quite like the fact that he is, particularly for a tournament, quite short-termist. Right, who's in good form? They go. But I still think there are key absentees. Now, look at the absentee list. You're upset about Nacho. I think Mario Hermoso not going is a terrible
decision.
Yes. I mean, I don't dislike the central defenders that are going, but I think the idea that Mario Hermoso doesn't go, I don't understand. I don't understand the idea of Navas not going, unless, of course, he's not fully fit, because he's had a very long season. But I think him not going is surprising. Marino, I can just about accept, because I think that midfield is reasonably strong. But I like Marino a lot, but I can accept it. Canales, similar. I think he's a great player. I would like him there. But I think that midfield is relatively strong. One person we haven't... Morata is in there. I was going to say I couldn't see Morata. Morata is in there. And as for Barry Aspas, we are biased. We are very much.
Yeah, but we're biased because he's so good. Exactly. You know, we're not biased.
We're not biased because he's our mate. Let's make this clear. Yeah, we'd love Barry to be our mate, but we're not pretending Barry is our mate. He's not. I think that decision is just all sorts of baffling.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing I've wondered about Aspas is, does Luis Enrique look at him and think, I don't know if he's my centre forward, my wide man on the right, or my wide man on the left, and therefore he doesn't fit into my structure. I don't know if maybe Luis Enrique looks at him and thinks, this is a brilliant player, but he's a brilliant player at a team where he does the Messi role and everyone else fits around him and everyone else moves when he moves and reacts to him and everything has to rely on him and he has to be the central piece. And for the Spanish national team, I don't think he's good enough, or I don't want that to be the case. I don't know if Luis Enrique thinks that. I think there would be something in that that would feel semi-rational. But it's just not. It doesn't make any sense. And every time he goes with Spain, he plays well.
I think he's got six goals and six assists in 18 appearances.
He loves playing for Spain. This is not someone who's ever shown any kind of... He's not a player who's problematic. He's problematic on the pitch because he's a lunatic, but he's not problematic off the pitch particularly.
Yeah.
He's not a difficult character in that sense. I find it difficult to understand. And I'm very conscious that it's easy to talk about people who aren't in the squad, but you've got to pick a number. And so who are you taking out? Well, show me that list again. Because... Adama Traoré goes ahead of Aspas. Pablo Sarabia goes ahead of Aspas. I'm sorry, no.
No.
Basically.
No. Eric Garcia ahead of Nacho.
No.
Not having that. Anyway, it doesn't matter what we think.
And also, you know, there's a broader question here about Laporte. Now, I don't necessarily have a problem with having someone who's taken a Spanish passport to play for the national team, but I do think it's potentially problematic within the squad. I genuinely think that Diego Costa going to the 2014 World Cup was a problem and was maybe part of the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
Because of the symbolism of it, because of the idea of it. I think there's a big difference between a player who has developed a country, grown up in a country, taken that on, and a player who has sort of looked around and thought, oh, I could get in that team.
Hmm. Okay, well, that's the Spain squad. We will still be watching the Spain matches.
Oh, we will. Of course we will. Well, I'm going to have to cover them for work. So.
You're going
to
be there.
Yeah.
So we'll keep you up to date over on Patreon. I just want to paint a picture of the scene where we're recording, because we're recording in a car park, but it's not our usual car park.
Yeah,
it's a different car park.
It's much nicer. There's a boy playing football.
It's a car park within one of the City of Madrid's biggest parks, and it's overlooking a dirt football pitch. There is a football goal with no net. There is a young boy about 8 or 9 playing football with his dad in the late sort of early summer sunshine. And it's quite an idyllic setting for a Spanish football podcast.
It's very Spanish, the way the dust is kind of coming up every time they kick the ball.
Yes. So there we go. That's where we are. And this is where we're going to be, as I said, for the rest of the summer, because we're going to be
in this very park.
I'll stay here. I'll stay here for the next 3 months, Sid, if that's what I have to do to get the content out for our patrons. As it is the final Monday podcast of the season, we've got some prizes to give away, okay? Our friends at Real Betis have given us, wait for it, a signed Joaquin shirt.
You must be Joaquin.
I genuinely said to Al, can we keep it?
I know, I tell you what. Thing is, if we kept it, what would we do?
We'd just rotate it.
We'd have to sort of sellotape it on the back of the Podmobile and just all sit there and stare at it.
We decided we're not going to do that. We're going to give it away to one lucky TSFP listener. And
it's a brilliant, brilliant prize.
It's fantastic. And also, we've got a second prize as well. Our friends at Sock Council have given us a pair of their Spain 1994 World Cup inspired Luis Enrique socks.
And those socks are almost as wacky as the list of players you come up with.
Yes. So you're in good. I was going to say your feet will be in good hands. That doesn't mean. So, anyway, here is the. Competition.
If you went
question.
To a pathologist, they might be.
Yes. Here is the competition question. Okay, listen up, because it's slightly cryptic, but if you know, you know.
Okay, here we go.
Which sport has Joaquin famously never played in his life, Julio?
Love it.
That's which sport
question.
Has Joaquin famously never played in his life, Julio? Like I said, slightly cryptic, but if you know, you know. You can send us your answer in the following ways: by tweeting us using the hashtag TSFP giveaway, please use that hashtag or we might miss your tweet. So it needs to have that hashtag. Send us a message on Facebook or Instagram or Patreon if you're a patron. We'll pick two winners from all entrants at random and contact you for your details. You have until this Friday night at midnight Spanish time to enter. Good luck. We're also giving away an extra pair of the socks on Twitter. So if you'd like to enter there, you can do that as well. Sid, that's it for another season.
Wow.
Our eighth season doing this podcast.
We basically are the Simeone era.
More or less.
I think Diego should be thanking us, or should we be thanking him? I think it would be rather presumptuous to think that Simeone should thank us. So maybe we should thank him.
Well, we should. We actually should, because now we've got this big three. And before him, we didn't have this big three.
I think that sometimes the demands made on Atletico Madrid to be part of the big three perhaps overlook what a monumental achievement it is to have turned two into three like this.
It is an unbelievable achievement. When he came, they were 10th in the table. They'd just been knocked out of the Copa del Rey by I can't remember who.
Albacete, I think.
And, you know, it was disastrous. And here we are.
Partido a partido.
Partido a
podcast
partido.
Podcast
a podcast. Podcast a podcast. 10 years later. And here we are. Still in a car park. Still talking rubbish about Spanish football. Thank you guys for sticking with us throughout the whole season. It's been very much appreciated. Like I said, we'll be back at the start of next season here on the Monday podcast feed. If you'd like to keep up with everything that goes on in Spain between now and then, please come and join us at Patreon, because we're going to be doing loads of content there throughout the summer. If not, don't worry. We'll speak to you in a few months. Adios. Thank you.
Cheerio.